Can I rant for a second?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some random hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized that people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. That's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh. Services are provided by Green Dot Bank. Member FDIC. Terms apply.
JLab Audio is personal tech designed for you that fits your life, looks cool, and offers surprisingly awesome value.
Imagine the products and features you actually want and make sure the entire experience of owning them is a great one.
A new legacy in sound. JLab's new luxury over-ear headphones, seamlessly blending innovation and lab quality sound.
Over here at Fake Doctors Real Friends, we love our JLab Audio headphones. They feature over 70 hours of playtime, 4 different colorways to choose from, and 3 noise control modes. Use Real Friends for 25% off your order. Visit JLab.com to find your kind of tech.
Did you know that 46% of us don't take all our vacation days? Even though it's been proven that taking time off to play makes us more productive.
In California, no matter where you go, you'll find play. Explore a redwood forest, immerse yourself in art galleries, or just park yourself in a beach chair and chill. Play is everywhere in California, so take some well-deserved playtime off and discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
In every pair of Tecovas boots, you can expect handmade quality, first wear comfort, and timeless Western style.
Tecovas boots are always made from Peruvian bovine and exotic leathers, and with occasional resoling, they will last a lifetime. The best way to shop for boots is at your local Tecovas stores, where you'll be greeted by the smell of fresh leather and a friendly smile.
Come on in, grab a cold one, get fitted by a pro, and shop the latest styles. Visit Tecovas.com. That's TECOVAS.com. And don't go gently, y'all.
Donald, I'm very excited today.
I'm very excited today, too. Listen, man, hold on. Before we get it started and before we get into this, I'm so happy with all of the press that we're getting.
Yes.
And all of the people that are listening to us and stuff.
Yes, thank you for
the
listening.
The fans are tuning in. This is really amazing,
we
dude.
We certainly weren't expecting it to be. We just did press to Australia. We certainly weren't expecting this kind of reaction.
Not at all. And I did some press for Emergence today.
Yeah.
And they wanted to talk about the podcast.
Yes.
And it was overseas, though. It was like in the UK and stuff.
Yes.
I guess
we're
playing in the UK? Is this true?
We're all over the globe. You can listen to this in Stad. You can listen.
Can you really listen to it in Stad, though?
Yes. You know, if you have a computer, you can listen to us, right?
As long as you have iHeart, wherever you get your podcasts, you can hear us.
But we're a sponsor.
Our plug is iHeart, so big shout out to iHeart. Hello,
I don't
iHeart.
We don't have a sponsor yet, really, yet. We will, I guess. But I just want to say that Red Bull, if you want to sponsor us, you should, because I just drank a full one, and I am so hyped up right now.
Oh, man.
I'm so thrilled about our guest.
So am I. I'm very excited about who we have on the show today.
But first, we should sing, Donald.
Let's get into it. 5, 6, 7, 8.
Stories about a show we made about a bunch of dogs and nurses and a janitor.
All right. Now, you might know her as America's favorite Canadian. You might know her as Second Becky. You might know her as the beautiful blonde that starred on the show Scrubs for many years. Go ahead, Donald. You do the intro.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, cats, dogs, whatever you may be, please welcome to the show the one and only Sarah Chalk.
Sarah Chalk.
Hi.
Sarah, don't worry. We'll add thunderous applause.
It'll sound like you walked into a stadium.
Yeah, Dan, can you add thunderous applause
later?
Thank you. All right, here's Sarah Chalk. Hi, Sarah.
I didn't know whether to talk because I didn't hear the thunderous applause, so I thought maybe I was just getting a glitch in these fancy headphones. Can I see you guys? Like, right now I'm staring at the GarageBand screen. Can I make it small so I can see you guys?
All you got to do is click back on Zoom.
So Dan, can I hit the yellow button and make GarageBand small?
I'm just going to put it out there. You ruined our introduction. I'm just going to put it out there.
No, guys, you can edit this out, Dan.
I don't want to edit it out, Dan. Listen. Now that Sarah's ruined the magic, I want the fans to know that we've been on Zoom for a half hour while Sarah was getting technical support from our editor. Sarah had a fucking technical intervention with our editor. She was like, how do you start your laptop?
And yet I've never felt more proud.
How are you?
Than I do in this moment, because I just want to successfully, Jean-Michel is going to edit this out. Just give me 1 second. I'm going to hit the yellow button in the corner, Dan, and minimize GarageBand so I can see Zach and Donald.
All right, do it. Just do it.
Go for it.
You don't even have to ask
for it. I'm worried that Sarah's going to call Dan for other technical help in her life. She's going to be like, hey, Dan, I can't get Wi-Fi signal.
I have
that
Dan's email.
That weird throaty cough laugh you just heard is a Sarah Chalk special.
How are you, Sarah?
I'm good, guys. I miss you. I miss you. And now seeing you on this Zoom is making me miss you more.
Nostalgic.
It's a weird
how are you where, right now? Where are you quarantining in Canada, I imagine?
So I'm quarantining in Canada. My sister and I have decided to quarantine our families together. So we have communally 6 children, 3 dogs, and a cat.
Wow.
Wow.
How are you doing school? How's school going?
School's interesting. School is basically, we have children between the ages of 3 and 16. So we'd only have so many screens and so much bandwidth to attend different online classes. So we've been kind of doing some of that and then some group classes. My sister is a lawyer, so she's teaching law. So like really light things like, lessons on the rights of the child, the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child. Next week's the Constitution. And I do equally important things like give them cartoon sides and they audition for cartoons.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Maybe you could give them a scene from Rick and Morty and you guys could all play parts.
We have actually, we've done some cartoons. We haven't reached Rick and Morty yet because that's not appropriate for the 4-year-old.
Right.
And as it's sort of, tight quarters, we haven't gotten there yet, but yeah, it's pretty nuts. I mean, we're all quarantined together. I'm the designated grocery shopper probably because of all my OCD tendencies. So I feel like, that's the most harrowing experience in my life right now, which is, I go to the grocery store. I have my own, version of PPE, which is like raiding the Drama 8 props bin. So I have like a toque and sunglasses and I put my hoodie up and gloves
on.
A
toque for you non-Canadians is a hat.
It's a hat, yes.
I was about to say, what the fuck is a toque?
Like a beanie.
Sarah, if you wouldn't mind translating your Canadianisms as we go through the podcast today, because there are some non-Canadians listening.
Yes, the main ones really are toque, garburator, parkade, and seawall.
What's a garburator? Oh, the garbage disposal.
The garbage disposal. Got it.
Yeah, which and happened to be the first thing that broke when I came to Los Angeles and the landlord did not understand me.
And a parkade is a parkade a parking structure?
Zach, your Canadian's doing very well. You've been studying.
I'm just guessing. I'm playing a game called Guess the Canadian Expression. So are there any other ones we should know about?
Parkade, seawall.
What's a seawall? The obvious? A seawall?
Like a boardwalk.
Oh, okay.
And then you have that thing with the gravy and fries. What's that called? But that's maybe
la poutine.
La poutine. Okay.
There poutine.
I know about poutine.
That's French, so good. Isn't it?
Yeah, it's the gravy and the cheese curds on top of the fries.
It's just that gravy and delicious. Cheese on fries, but they take great pride in it in Canada.
They do. How's your guys' quarantine going?
Oh, it's amazing.
Is that sarcasm, Tom?
How much time do you spend in that closet, Donald?
I'm going to be honest with you.
Donald hides out in that closet, Sarah, every day. Donald tells his family that he's recording the podcast. Donald's family thinks he records the podcast every day and he's in the closet. But meanwhile, we do it twice a week.
Yeah, my wife keeps asking, like, yo, when is the next episode coming out? You record so many of them.
You're banking him.
Of course, it's coming soon.
Casey thinks that Donald records like 4 podcasts a day in there.
Well, I definitely do a lot of press. I'll be like, oh, I'm doing so much press right now.
You should set up your PlayStation in there, Donald.
I just don't know how I get the TV in here. That's the problem.
Dan knows. He knows.
Dan
could hook it up.
Dan will do it. Dan, really quickly, it says Zoom would like to record this computer screen. Grant access to this application and security and privacy preferences. Denied.
Sarah. No. You don't want to record this.
Sarah, screen. Dan is ours. Sarah. He's not there for your technical needs.
Okay. So let's get into it.
Wait, before we get into the episode, Sarah, Donald and I have done this a few episodes now, and now that we have you, we wanted to ask you, tell us about your casting process, because as I remember, you were coming off of Roseanne. You were doing that particularly unique thing where you had replaced the Becky.
That was years before, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I was like 17, 18, 19, 20 when that happened. So four years before.
And by the way, I was thinking as I was preparing for this, because Sarah, I do a lot of research. I get really into this now. By the way, I found for you Scrubs fans out there and for us, I found a website called Scrubs Wiki, W-I-K-I, where it has like everything you ever want to know about Scrubs. Like I'm like literally whoever made that.
Well,
thank
it doesn't
you.
Have everything. It doesn't have us.
No, it doesn't have us, but it has a lot of it has a lot of insightful information. And
I feel like they should not go to Wiki, Scrubs Wiki.
Yeah, but it literally has these are the fantasies in the episode. These are the girl's name JD was called. It's like all broken down. So someone put a lot of work into it. Don, give him a shout out.
Shout out to you for putting all that work in, but we got it from here.
Oh my God. Donald's jealous. All right, listen. Donald, before I was thinking about Sarah and I was thinking, is there another example other than Roseanne where they just replaced the actress and had them play the same character? And
I was thinking about Fresh Bewitched.
Bewitched. Now, was he just a different Darren?
Yeah, I think they just flipped him out.
Flipped him out. Tell just briefly about that, because I find it's a very unique thing, and you've told me and Donald, and I just wanted, if you could just talk about what that was like really quickly, because I think it's so interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I was 16 when I auditioned, and it was Glenn Quinn, the guy who played my husband, Mark. The audition was with him, and he just made out with seven girls. We were all dressed exactly the same in matching pink shirts, and the whole scene was this, like, makeout scene where he's like, baby, baby, come here, and I'm like, get a job at the gas station. He's like, baby, baby, come here. And it was literally, like, every other actress that was auditioning was, like, 22, living in Los Angeles. I flew in. They flew me in for the night to go and read. And I just remember I was 16. He was 24 and just thinking, he is so handsome. How am I going to remember one line? And they said, we'll let you know in a couple days. And then they called back and they're like, OK, come back tomorrow and read with Roseanne. Then I did. And then Tom Arnold called me at home a few days later and he was trying to feel out whether I was going to leave the show to go to college because I was younger then and still, you know, at an age where I would do that. And Sarah Gilbert at the time had left to go to Yale and she was flying back to do episodes. And Lisi had left to go to Vassar. And so I knew right away that that's what he was asked. I could tell that's what he was getting at.
He was probably not allowed to do that, right? So he was sort of tiptoeing around.
Right, like Roseanne was like, I can't call. Baby, why don't you call?
Why don't you call? That's pretty much
what happened.
Probably, yes. So then I said, I was like, no, college, gross, absolutely not. And I knew I would go to college, but Roseanne was a big opportunity for me, and I knew that I wouldn't.
You knew you weren't going to lose the job over it, so you were like, college, ew.
College, vomit. And I just did it on the side. And so I got the job, but the craziest part of the story that I actually hadn't remembered and we were talking about recently was they called me and told me I had the job, and I went to a party that night. So I'm going to this, like, little high school in Canada, and I get this phone call that I was going to replace Becky, and I told a couple people, and it spread around our high school pretty fast. It sounded like a lie. I mean, it doesn't, like, I'm going to replace Becky on the Roseanne show. The Roseanne show was the number one show at the time. It sounded fake. And then I get a call the following week, and it was the Roseanne show saying, we're getting cold feet about recasting Becky. So we don't know if we're going to do it. So we're going to hold you for 4 months. We're going to give you 10 grand. To hold you. So first of all, I'd never heard of money like $10,000. And I thought to do nothing, like just to sit here for 4 months while you make a decision. And then the other half of me thought, like, my ass is grass at high school. Like they're going to tell me in 4 months if we're actually going to do this. So I had to kind of wait.
You should have brought that money, Sarah. You should have brought that money to school and just like fanned it out.
They got me on hold, y'all.
I wasn't lying. Y'all,
they
this
got
is
me
called,
on hold.
For those of you who don't know, this is called a holding deal.
Right. This is a holding fee.
Excuse me. Excuse me while I fan my face with my holding deal.
Totally. Exactly. And then I know, and by the time you convert it to Canadian dollars, it was obviously a whole different situation. So it was a crazy, experience. I was a baby and I had no idea what I was doing. And I just watched like Roseanne and Laurie Metcalf and Sandra Bernhardt and Sarah Gilbert and John Goodman and Johnny Galecki and this like ridiculous list of comedians, and was kind of in awe and a little bit terrified. And then after two seasons, they, you know, gave everybody hugs by like, I'll see you guys after hiatus, which is the break that you take between seasons for anyone listening to that weird term. And then I get a phone call saying Lisey's coming back to play Becky. And apparently I said, I want to talk to Roseanne for closure. I don't remember doing that, but apparently that's what I said. And so I did. And then, they called me like six episodes into the following season and said, come back this week. Darlene's getting married in an episode. And can you come down and be Becky? And I was like, when? And they said, tomorrow.
So Lisey had just changed her mind and she left?
They didn't tell me. They just said, can you come back tomorrow? And I said, well, I'm going to college up here now. and I'm doing this movie of the week where John Ritter, interestingly enough, who played obviously your dad on Scrubs, I was doing a TV movie with him up here. And I said, so I can come on Friday night for tape night. So it was the craziest day. I remember I wrote an oceanography exam at like 6:30 in the morning, went straight into the scene with this pregnancy belly. I just remember ripping the pregnancy belly off on the way to the airport and got to LA, and they had a car waiting for me with hair and makeup in the car.
Oh my God.
I did my hair and makeup on the way to the live taping, and the taping had already started and I hadn't seen anyone since I'd been fired. And they were like, hold these flowers, say this, stand here, do this. It got to, you know, the point where Roseanne would take questions from the audience. And somebody said, why do you keep switching Becky's back and forth? And she was like, well, it's going to be chalky from now on. And that's how I found out I had the job back for the last year and a half of the show.
Wow. That's insane. Wow. I really think, Sarah, that is a story that I never heard of another actor having. That is just, if you're, when do you ever see or hear something like that happening to an actor? That's just insane.
Well, as we all know, Sarah has the craziest luck in the history of, like, just everything happens to Sarah.
Sarah, we touched on that a bit in an earlier episode, how you would come in on Monday morning and you would have a story that was like nothing else we had ever heard. And it happened every week.
Honestly, I still feel like sometimes I need to call you guys because I'm like, you would not believe what just happened to me. Lately, it's mostly at the grocery store. I mostly want to call you after I leave the grocery store and be like, take a deep breath and be like, okay, so I get there. The produce box bottoms out and all the produce drops in the main aisle where everybody's standing. The woman behind me coughs. The woman in front of me. I mean, that is every day right
now. We just couldn't believe that every Monday morning you would be like, you are not going to believe what happened to me this weekend. And then we'd be like, yeah, right. And then she would go into a story that was like, that's the most insane thing I've ever heard. Right. That's just this weekend.
Right. And also it would be so crazy. I'd be like, there's no way she can make this shit up. Right. There's no way she can make this up.
I mean, it is incredible how similar I am with Elliot.
Okay, well, Let's talk about the audition process.
Yeah,
then.
That's a good segue into talk about getting Scrubs now, because what was the auditioning process? When I read, finally came around to getting callbacks, I was reading with you. So were you the first person cast?
Donald and I were cast together.
Yeah.
My audition process, I had just moved back, like after the Roseanne show, I moved back to Canada for 4 years. And then my best friend had finished film school and she wanted to produce and I wanted to act. And there was just at the time, not as much filming in Canada as does now. And I creatively was like, okay, I'll go back and give LA another try. We got a 6-month sublet and we moved down. We didn't know anyone and we never had any plans. And so this one night we had plans, we were going to a show and I get two auditions in my, you know, for the next day. And normally I'm so type A, I would have canceled my plans and spent every second that existed between getting the sides until going into the audition, working on it. And I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm not canceling, you know, on Jen. We're going to go to the show. And I got home and it was midnight and my audition was at 9 a.m. And the other audition was at noon. My Scrubs audition was at 9 a.m. And I opened the script and I started reading it. And I swore every page. I was like, fuck, oh shit, oh my God, this is so good. And every page I was like, oh shit, this is like the best thing I've ever read. Oh fuck, I want this job so badly. I want this part so bad. And so by 12:30, I'm like sitting there with having read the script and with these sides. And I love the show. I love the writing. I love the part so much. So I thought, okay, I'll skip the other audition. I won't read that one. Whatever that is goes in the garbage. And I read with Debbie and Brett, the casting directors, at 9 o'clock on a Friday morning. And they said, okay, can you come back at 3 to read with Bill?
That's a good sign.
That's a great sign right there. That's and like then, right away.
One of Jen's and my very, very good friends' husbands was in town for work, and he had come over to visit us. And so him and Jen, Aaron Brindle and Jen, read the sides with me. And so we just kept like running them. And then I went in and auditioned with Bill at 3. Auditions were like 10 days later because they were still casting other people to go to studio and network. So then we did studio and then network. So there's 4 auditions, and I wore the same thing to every single one.
I did too.
I remember that about you, Sarah, because the last 2 auditions, we were there together. I remember that. And you wore the same jeans with the big-ass belt. And it had a big belt buckle. Am I right?
Okay, I know the belt you're talking about.
Yeah.
I went through a very big belt buckle collecting phase. So I had this old vintage leather belt, and then I would switch out like an old Coca-Cola belt buckle, or like, so I did wear the belt a lot. But in my memory, I don't know. We could both either. I have no idea which one of us is right. But in my memory, what I wore was I wore black boots with a heel, black pants, and a tight black tank top. Because when I first moved to LA and I would go on these auditions, I remember I went out for an Aaron Spelling wearing these like plaid funky bell bottoms that I thought were really cool, and this like vintage t-shirt, and I thought that I was like super excited about this outfit. I walked in and there were 10 girls and they were all wearing tight black tank tops and tight black pants, and I thought, oh, okay, so that's how you do it here.
Got it. I remember the jeans being blue. I do remember them being, I thought they were tight as fuck too. I remember being like, damn, them jeans is tight.
By the way, I was the same jeans. I was the same way, not with the tight jeans, but the second I started getting callbacks, I was like, I'm not washing this. I want my pheromones. I want my right. pheromones on it. I'm not jinxing this thing. And I would get like another callback and be like, not changing. I was just so towards the end, I remember I was like doing the same thing I did that morning. I would get up, I would sit in the chair, have a coffee, I would go to the treadmill, do 30 minutes. Like, I had a whole regimen. I would listen to the same few songs before I went to the audition. I, like, had a ritual. Do you remember what they were?
Definitely Madonna.
One of mine was Change by Blind Melon.
Oh, I love it.
How is a melon blind? That doesn't make no sense.
Donald is the name of a very popular band. You might like their music. Let's circle back to Sarah's audition process.
I feel like probably I'm guessing that Babies Got Back was another one of the songs.
Wow. Wow. That really got you.
Do you want to tell them your Baby Got Back story?
Yes.
I was very impressed that you knew. I didn't know that song as well as you knew that song.
For grad parent event, we had to do a talent for the parents, and kids got up and played the violin and the piano, and 10 of my girlfriends and I got up and danced. We had a whole routine.
The routine you did is a bit sexual. I think that was kind of odd for the talent show.
No, they were seniors, though.
I think all of our parents were probably like, I should ask them. I should, like, what did you think when your child was up there at grad parent event? It seems like a very odd.
How old were you guys?
We were in grade 12, which is Canadian for 12th grade.
Yeah, right. So you were about to graduate.
We were in grade 12, yeah. Which is Canadian for 12th grade.
Yep. So anywho, I listened to my songs, the whole NBC lot. Mm-hmm. And in the quarantine cleanup, I did find my sides from the audition, little visitors pass.
Oh, you saved it.
I saved both of those. But I remember being in the parking lot and just like seat back in the car and lying there. And someone told me to do this. I've never told anyone this, but to visualize yourself walking into the audition, visualize the whole thing playing out, and visualize yourself walking out and it going really well. And so I remember sitting in my car in the NBC parking lot, closing my eyes, visualizing the whole thing. And then Donald and I were in there together with some other Turks and some other Elliots and some other JDs. And we basically all took turns going in, and then they came back out, and then you go back in with this person and read together, and then they pair you up and you read together. And it was, pretty nerve-wracking.
Let me ask you a question. Did you know any of the young ladies that were auditioning for your role? I knew both of the guys that were auditioning for Turk. I knew, and I not only did I know them, I knew them well, too. Like, I hung out with one of them We used to play a lot of basketball together. And then the other one, we did a bunch of movies together. Or we did a movie together, but I would see him out at the club all the time.
Was it Denzel?
I wish it was Denzel. I wish I could be like Denzel. I got it. Yo, D,
I got
that shit.
Denzel. Denzel, this one's mine. I'm sorry.
Sorry, buddy. You'll bounce back. Don't worry about it.
So was that weird to sit there with kind of buddies or...
Yeah, you know, it was very weird. And it's also one of those things where it was like, you know, if one of these guys get it, I'm going to lose my shit. You know what I mean? Like, as much as I love you guys and as much as, you know, I root for you guys, I want this so bad. I want this so bad I could taste it. Both very successful, have gone on to do other things. I just really wanted Chris Turk bad.
Yeah, well, you got it.
I mean, so when you're sitting in that, for people that are listening, when you're sitting in that position and you're going to studio, you're going to network, you don't have the part yet, and you sign a 6-year contract. They call it 5+1. And I'm always like, well, but isn't that 6 years?
that's a contract lingo for don't tell them it's 6 years. We're going to call it 5+1.
Yeah, 5+1. So you sign 5+1. And I feel like that's always such a feeling of... I mean, you're 24 and you're thinking, wow, until I'm 30. And in any other scenario, that would kind of take your breath away. In this case, I was just like, yes, for the love of God, please, 100 years of doing this. Like, right. there was no 2 seconds of thinking about it. It was like, I'm desperate. And wow, if it could ever go, I would be grateful for as many years as it would go for. And that feeling of just complete signing that and so hopeful that would happen anyways. Then Bill called me, it's a few hours later that day, or it was the next day. It was very soon after the audition. It was either later that day or the next day. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't believe it. I think we all probably, after reading that script, kind of felt like it was really something special and had the possibility of, I mean, obviously you never know, but the chance to go for a chunk
well,
of time
as you know,
the writing
Sarah,
is so good.
As you know, Sarah, I did not read the script before we shot the pilot. I didn't read the script until the table read. And I was like, oh, that's what happens.
Really?
Dude. I didn't know it was a freaking dope pilot until my agent was like, dude, this is like a really big pilot.
I never knew the trivia that you didn't read the script till the table read.
Dude,
I did not know that.
Remember the Titans? I didn't know what happened in the script until the table read. I just knew only my stuff. I was a kid. I was young.
Listen, there would be times when we'd be shooting Scrubs where, you know, the whole script wasn't out yet. And, you know, because the writers were behind. So we'd get scenes, but Bill would sort of explain what was going on. And, you know, you shoot out of order. So we'd be like Monday morning, you know, time to rehearse. And Donald and I are like standing on a table. And he'd whisper in my ear, be like, yo, why are we standing on a table? He had no idea what was happening in the script. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with the legendary Sarah Chalk. Can I rant for a second?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some random hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized that people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names? That's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me $1 on Apple Cash?
Shh. Services are provided by Green Dot Bank. Member FDIC. Terms apply.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
You know that feeling when you just have something you need to get off your chest? It's like a rain cloud following you around in your life.
People all carry around different stressors, big and small. Everyone has stress, but we all handle it differently.
When you keep your emotions bottled up, it can start to affect you negatively.
Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down.
We talk all the time about how much therapy has benefited us.
Therapy isn't just for those who have experienced a major life trauma. Therapy can help everyone with daily challenges with friends, family, and other relationships.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, you should start with BetterHelp.
It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/realfriends today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/realfriends.
Hey, listeners, it's been over a year since my family switched to our first Helix sleep mattress.
And let me tell you, we've never slept better at my house. If you're still sleeping on an old-school spring mattress, you're not getting your best night's sleep.
The Helix lineup offers 20 unique mattresses, including their award-winning Luxe and Ultra Premium Elite collections.
So how will you know which Helix mattress works best for you and your body? Take the Helix Sleep Quiz and find your perfect mattress in under 2 minutes. And your personalized mattress is shipped straight to your door, free of charge.
Helix knows there's no better way to test out a new mattress than by sleeping on it in your own home. That's why they offer a 100-night trial and a 10 to 15-year warranty to try out your new Helix mattress, depending on the model.
Don't want to take my word for it? Helix has been awarded the number one mattress picked by GQ and Wired Magazine.
Helix is offering up to 30% off all mattress orders and two free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/realfriends. That's helixsleep.com/realfriends. This is their best offer yet, and it won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now. JLab Audio is personal tech designed for you that fits your life, looks cool, and offers surprisingly awesome value.
Imagine the products and features you actually want and make sure the entire experience owning them is a great one.
Always packing the most functionality and fun into every product at a truly accessible price.
Zach, let me tell you, JLab has these new luxury over-ear headphones called the JBuds Lux ANC.
Yep.
These seamlessly blend innovation and lab quality sound, all in these sleek headphones that guarantee an elevated listening experience. You can connect to multiple devices, customize your sound in the JLab app, and get over 70 hours of playtime.
Well, buddy, those sound pretty cool, but have you heard of the JBuds ANC3? They are the smallest smart active noise canceling true wireless earbuds you can find. You can also connect to multiple devices, but these come with a built-in USB-C charging cable and a noise canceling microphone for crisp, clear phone calls. Use Real Friends for 25% off your order. Visit JLab.com to find your kind of tech.
And we're back.
Sarah, tell us about...
Okay, just really quickly before I tell you, I need to tell you my favorite example of Donald not having read the scene was... during the auditions in the show when you were, it was like, I can't remember what season, but we're supposed to be auditioning and Neil and Sam Lloyd are auditioning you. And like, I remember you walked in and you were like, oh yeah, I think I could, you read the actual script. You're like, I think I can, you know, come up with a dance for that. And you had to come up with a dance and you just came up with it on the spot. And you're such a fucking good dancer. You came up with this unbelievable dance to Poison. And then like, my kids are all obsessed with the fact that it's the Fortnite dance and they watch the Fortnite character do it beside you. And they've all tried to learn it. We've tried to learn it. I can't learn it. It's too hard.
I don't think I could even do it again. Listen.
So I just want to say, building off what Sarah said, that's a perfect example. Sorry, Sarah. That is the best example. Donald hadn't read the script, and everyone loves that dance. People talk about it. It's the Fortnite dance. It's everywhere. Donald literally showed up and was like, you want me to do what now? And he had to, and he totally improvised that dance on the spot.
Well, there was a lot of years of you know, I was a huge New Edition fan, a huge Bell Biv DeVoe fan. I still am a huge New Edition and Bell Biv DeVoe fan, and Bobby Brown and Ralph Tresvant, all of them. Anyway, I had been dancing like that my whole life, pretty much, since I was like, and since 92, I was doing dances like that. And so when they were like, we want you to dance to Poison, in my mind, I was like, yeah, I know some steps that I could do to that. To everybody else, because I remember I was late that day. Everybody packed the room that day. And I know the pressure was on me, but I was like, this is something that I do all the time. Now, there are other times where I didn't prepare when we were doing the show, and it cost us like hours of filming.
Oh my God, Donald! I remember I was directing once, and Donald had a paragraph of medical jargon, like a really hard a paragraph anyone would have to practice a lot because it was like fast medical jargon and like five sentences. And I was directing, and just Donald could not get it because he hadn't even looked at it. It's not something you could do on the spot. And I remember, you know, when you're directing a scene, you normally start with the widest shots and then you start moving into closer and closer angles. And I was like, Donald, we got to move on, dude. Don't worry. We'll cut it together. By the time we got to like an extreme close-up of Donald's face, like eyebrow to chin, he finally got it. And if you watch that episode, like Donald does the whole monologue in a shot that's like this tight. Because that was finally the only time he ever got it.
Those days are over, by the way. Just anybody who's looking to hire me for anything, I am not like that anymore.
Don't worry, I'm sure no casting directors or directors are listening to our podcast.
But and what Zach was saying about, getting the script sometimes, as the season would get towards the end and the writers were so taxed trying to crank out these scripts that were so funny. I remember one morning we got to work on a Monday morning and it was the week that my character had the voiceover because each of our characters had a voiceover for one time and they didn't have the script out yet, but we had to start shooting something. And so they said, we're just going to do a long kind of steady cam shot following you through the hallways. And I just want you to change your face around to go with different emotions and things we're going to write. So just, you're walking and you're thinking like a little bit happy and you're a little bit sad. And then you're thinking about something. We literally talked for 2 hours, just me and a steady cam. We're like,
that's funny that they probably had to eventually write to your expressions because they were changing. Cause then they didn't, and the camera didn't want to cut away. So it's like, okay, wait, she's about it. Got a second of seriousness and then a smile. So like we need a 1 second sentence and then it's something to smile about.
And then looking a little nostalgic and.
All right. Should we go into this episode? This is one of my favorite episodes. This is one of my favorite episodes of the whole 9 years. It really is special. And I want you to know, I haven't seen it in 20 years and I got goosebumps multiple times watching it. That's how it really does hold up.
I was about to say, there's some really great moments in this show, in particular with you, Sarah. I looked at this show when we first did this show. I was like, oh, wow, we all get a chance to shine here. But this was a moment, I feel like, for you and for Judy as well, where you guys really crushed this episode. Like, it's really fucking good. Like, you two alone, you and Judy alone, like, really, I don't know what it is, but you guys start off on a... as adversaries, and by the end of it, you're friends. And that's, for a half an hour, to be able to tell a story like that's very difficult, to start two people off as enemies, especially when the narrative so far in the show has been you guys not getting along. And so, it really is a testament to how good you are as an actress that you guys were able to not only bring the funny, but bring the drama, and then also bring the connection so that the story tracks all the way through. And I just wanted to give you props on that straight up, right out, the bat. And also, it was so early on in the show, too. It was episode 4. And so for us to be able to jump in and tell such a good story is really a testament to how good, first of all, Matt Tarsis, holy shit, yeah. What a good writer, dude.
Matt Tarsis wrote it. And we should also say that this was the first episode not directed by Adam Bernstein. And it was the first episode directed by Mark Buckland, who really added a lot of cool style. We've spoken about how Adam Bernstein really developed the language of how the camera moves in Scrubs and how you could do some trick shots and how there was a lot of creativity. The camera was a character in the show. And Mark Buckland, I think, with this episode, really took that and ran with it and added a lot of new language to the way the show was shot.
Adam Bernstein, it should be said, directed the Baby's Got Back video, in case anyone out there does not know that.
That is beautiful trivia there for you Scrubs fans. Sarah can do the full dance and knows all the lyrics to Baby's Got Back, and coincidentally... was it Sir Mix-a-Lot?
Yes, it is.
Sir Mix-a-Lot music video was directed by Adam Bernstein. There you go. That's not on your Scrubs wiki.
Right. Thank you. Told you, wiki. Wiki, we got it from here.
Well, first of all, Donald, thank you for saying all those nice things. I felt the same way about you guys. Like, I was like going like, wow, Donald and Zach fucking nailing this episode. And it's like, we just started. Like, we were a few weeks in. It was that fourth episode, but it was the third one that we'd shot in that chunk, separated out from the pilot. And like, I feel like Bill had told us a long time ago that... Didn't he say to the network, we're going to set it up. One out of every three patients die here. And you're kind of waiting the whole episode to find out who it's going to be. And then they all die. I feel like he said that to the network and they said, no, you can only have one patient die. And he said, nope, it's going to be all three. But we have to do that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're coming out of the gate right now. We're going to show the audience that this is what the show is. And all those years on Scrubs, this one for me absolutely is the one that stands out whenever I think of the show as being the one that really shows the responsibility that's put on these young doctors. I mean, my little sister is in her first year right now of being a real doctor. What a crazy time in the world to be doing that.
Wow.
And I can't believe her stories. I can't believe what level of responsibility that they're given right out of the gate. I mean, you know, I'll be at work on set and I'm on lunch and I come back from lunch and she's like, you know, she's just been doing CPR on someone for 30 minutes trying to save them. And I'm like, well, I was just in hair and makeup touch-ups and they took the same curl and recurled it again to make it curly. Like it just, it's such a, it takes your breath away, really, what the decisions young doctors have to make.
Do you think your sister was inspired by you? I mean, it's interesting, you know, a lot of younger sisters might be inspired that their older sister was a real doctor, but because she grew up with you playing this character, does she think that that inspired her at all?
Oh, I tried to get I'd say to my family, like, hey guys, like, did you see, you know, I was so excited about the show and I was like, did you see? And they were like, well, we TiVo'd it because it's on the same time as 24, but that Jack Bauer, did you see what he did? I feel like, you know, she's 13 years younger than me and I would like to think that I had that kind of an influence, but really she came out of the womb a doctor. I mean, the stories are crazy. I mean, yeah, she was just so interested in medicine from such a young age and really so calm under pressure. Like I remember just responsible. I mean, I remember we went on a road trip and she'd had her license for maybe 2 weeks. And my dad was like, so she's going to drive, right? And I was like, Dad, I've been driving for 13 and a half years. He's like, yeah. So she's going to drive, right? Like she just is just a much more responsible human, but it definitely has been interesting just rewatching a couple, like just last night, rewatching a couple of the early episodes and thinking about them just in the context of her and this one in particular, because it's pretty unbelievable. As you know, you see JD and Elliot and Turk and the pressure that is on them and just all of it, like trying to figure out, you know, what calls they can make on their own and when to go for help.
Here's a little bit more Scrubs trivia. Your little sister taught my 18-year-old when he was probably 9 to 10 months at this time how to walk.
That's right. Oh
my God. And it happened on the third floor of the hospital, right in between our dressing rooms.
That's so crazy.
Crazy. And now she's an adult and she's taking care of patients. Wow. Is she on the front line right now?
She is. I think about her mostly every minute.
Wow.
We bring pots and pans every night, all of us. And my 3-year-old has broken a couple measuring cups because she gets so into it.
That's very sweet. You do it as like an honor to the healthcare workers?
Yeah. So it's really cool, actually. Everybody goes out everybody goes outside at like 7 o'clock and just bangs the pots and pans and screams and cheers.
Oh, I like that. I want my neighborhood to do that. We need a primal scream.
Oh, start it. It's so cool. Yeah.
Just segueing back to the show, I want to just say that you'll hear us at a minute and 45 seconds. There's this really cool Steadicam shot that really kind of sets up the tone of the show. You'll hear us talk about the word Steadicam a lot on this. And if you don't know what it is, it's a way of mounting the camera on an operator's body so that the operator can move around and the camera just feels like it's floating around. And it's something that was used extensively on the Scrubs set as we traveled on the hallways. But I pointed out as I was talking about Mark Buckland, the director's style, how I like this sort of way he's introducing that this episode is going to be about the three of us, where the camera starts on me and then it goes to Sarah and it never cuts. And then it goes by the children. And then it comes up to Donald as he comes into the room. And I just thought that was kind of an early example of something that we ended up doing a lot of sort of moving around the hallways without cutting a lot.
Yeah. Also, if I don't know if you guys noticed, but the hospital's really dark in this episode.
Yeah, that's true.
The lights aren't on really. Everything's, you know, it's very, very dark in this episode. Not only that, here's another thing. It's jumping ahead, but this is one of the first times where Kelso isn't the bad guy on the show also. What I've noticed is that when we're dealing with something like that's as powerful or as strong as death, it's us versus the hospital, if you've noticed that. You know what I mean? It's the cast versus death. And in this one, Kelso is a mentor in this one. He gives really good advice in this one to JD. Mm-hmm. And he's not the obstacle. He's the one that's actually trying to help solve the problems in this. Mm-hmm. Now, if you watch other episodes, he's never really like that. You know what I mean? He's always He's always the bad guy. This was the first episode, well, obviously the first episode in the run, but this is the first episode that I can remember where I was like, wow, Kelso was on board with us this whole time.
Mm-hmm. I like what you pointed out, too, about the lighting, because traditionally in half-hour TV comedy, everything's always bright. There's like this unwritten rule that for it to be funny, it's got to be bright. And again, just challenging some of the conventions in this episode, both John Inwood, the cinematographer, and Mark Buckland did things like have it be in dark rooms, you know, having some of the dramatic moments like in ICU later happen in you know, at night or at sundown, which I thought was, I agree. That was something I hadn't noticed. This is the first time they did that.
Yeah, it carries on throughout the series too.
Yeah. At 2:26, we meet Catherine Justin playing Mrs. Tanner. Now, she is such she has since passed away, but was such an extraordinary actress. And I remember she had just done a very high profile run on The West Wing where that character had passed away as well. And I remember thinking, well, is that going to be odd that she's coming on to our, I mean, I'm glad she's coming on because she's a wonderful actress, but having just played someone else who died, I think I just remember that being in my head. Like she had just done such a high profile moment on West Wing. But then the second I started working with her, I just felt in awe of her talent. And that was the furthest thing from my mind.
One of my favorite moments in the episode when she says, "Are you a good doctor?" And you say, "It's probably too soon to tell." Like I just feel like it's such an example of how the show walked that line of like, you're just on the edge of your seat and you're crying and then you're laughing. And there's a few moments.
Oh, there's a couple of moments that I laughed my ass off. When JD goes to the park to meet up with her.
Yeah.
And he's like, "You got to get your ass back to the hospital." And then he's like, "Is that s'mores?" And then they cut away. And then they cut back and he's still chastising her, but now he's got chocolate all on his lips.
Yeah. JD was not going to pass up a s'mores moment. Are you kidding me?
You think he could have gotten a big cake?
JD was trying, his perfect JD thing to be like really trying to be taken seriously with s'mores chocolate over all over his lips.
Another one of my favorite laugh out loud moments is when Donald is doing the workout video.
Let me get my sweat on.
By the way, which is foreshadowing the poison dance a little bit because you're dancing in the very same room.
And a little bit of, and some sweet moves that I guarantee you were not in the 80s workout video, but when he's like, "She had such energy and warmth, dude, the woman League of Women Voters called and they want to know where to send your membership."
Sarah, tell us about I'm a Chunky Monkey from Funky Town, because I remember that and I just was like, who wrote that? That is the most random thing in the world.
I guess Matt Tarsis, or who knows.
But was the idea that you were just testing out Elliot was just testing out that she could say anything in front of a woman?
Yes. Yes. I think so. Yes. Obviously to Carla's dismay.
There's a lot of trivia in this episode because we introduced characters that from that moment on weren't on the show anymore. Like I remember Layla Lee. She plays the surgeon in the room with Dr. Wynn and Turk.
She was really good. I had the same reaction. I was like, what happened to her? She was good.
Yeah, so I do know the story. I remember we were filming, and it was a couple of episodes in, and she was going to come back as my nemesis. And she was saying how she had just got this part on a television show that was going to take her out of California, or not out of California, but out of the Los Angeles area. And she was going to go do that instead. And I remember being like, but what about us? What about what we've got going? This is so funny. And she was like, you know, I'm a guest star on this show, but on the other show, I would be a lead. And so she went and took the other job, to be honest with you. And
do you remember what the show was?
It was Tremors.
Oh, okay.
It was a syndicated version of Tremors. And I remember it ran for a while. And the dad from Family Ties, I think, is on it. I'm not sure.
I just remember watching that scene, which we'll get to later in the episode, and you guys had such a funny banter, that spoofing of a couple driving together, and then I had the same thought. I go, oh, that young woman was so funny. What happened to her? And I guess she got her own show at the time.
She got a job and went on to do other things.
Two other people of Scrubs lore who were introduced in this episode, 7:59. Yeah. I very quickly, if you watch, Danny Rose. Yes. He was Bill's assistant, then obviously became a producer on the show. He walks by in the park and he has tankers on his shoulder.
Shoulders, yeah.
And tankers was what, a big bulldog that he had?
Yeah, tankers.
And I just, we have to talk about the legendary Mike Schwartz, who plays his very first appearance. A lot of times we're watching these episodes and I forget that some of these people were introduced so early. So Mike Schwartz was one of the writers on the show, very funny comedy writer. And he plays the delivery guy, the UPS guy, if you will, that is first, they establish him giving something to Kelso, and then later he comes and delivers the ton of bricks to me. He is, we had so many laughs with that guy, huh?
Oh my God, he was constantly doing bits and making us all laugh. Like, you'd walk by him in the hallway and he'd be like, what, what's that? Oh, it's J. Crew.
he would do this bit that I don't know why it was so funny, but he would pretend to call off to someone that wasn't there. And he would do a bit where he was pretending that they were asking him who made his shirt. And so he'd be reaching for the tag. He'd be going, what? Oh, hold on. Let me. Oh, yeah, it's J. Crew. And it was so stupid, but he was talking to no one. And you would laugh every single time.
Every time. Or loneliest guy in the world, where you tap him on the shoulder and be like.
Right. Well, we ended up putting that in the show.
Totally.
He went on to be the, was he the drummer? For the air band, that same episode that we were talking
yes.
about.
Yes.
Yeah.
He liked his character. Like later episodes, we learned that his character liked speed metal.
Right. And that his character was a big time like drug addict and everything like that, and was always
I think so.
And stuff like that.
And he was very lonely. But that bit about, that was his bit where you, if he, no one touched him. So if you ever did graze his shoulder, he would sort of cuddle his own shoulder.
Because he was so lonely.
Because he was so lonely and lacking of touch.
Loneliest guy in the world. And then Randall Winston is introduced as Death.
Yes.
Death, yeah.
Randall That's Winston, right. our fearless
so
leader.
Randall Winston was our line producer on the show. And for those who don't know, a line producer is the producer that really is handling the sort of the daily money of things, really like the guy with the spreadsheet being like, we can afford that, we can't afford that. And he is a very tall man. How tall would you say he is? 6'7" or something?
6'6".
Yeah, and so he was established early on as Death.
And he played Death throughout the whole run.
Yes, and some of you are too young to know that what this joke is about Connect Four. But Connect Four was a game from...
It still is a game. Kids still play Connect
but
Four.
But I'm saying they didn't have the cheesy ad.
Right,
the cheesy
ad
in the 80s was a brother and sister playing, and the sister wins, and the brother goes, pretty sneaky, sis. Remember that? You guys can look it up on YouTube. And so that's why we were spoofing that old 80s ad where I go, pretty sneaky, Death.
But you got to do the lead up to it is, I win. Where? I don't see it. Right here, diagonally. Pretty sneaky, sis.
Pretty sneaky, sis.
And Randall is, his main belief was that it's not a party unless both hands are in the air. So we had the most incredible rap parties and
we would rap shows. We had great parties, man. And Randall is like some of the highlights of every part, like some of the best party highlights that I've ever experienced involve Randall.
Yeah,
fortunately
for us, the guy spending the money for the party really loved to party.
Right.
Yeah, we had some good parties.
I'm sure there's episodes where they were like, you don't need that set. We're throwing a party.
Why Johnny C's home space looked very sparse because we needed to go to Vegas.
Oh my God, we were just talking about that, how Johnny C, they didn't get around to Johnny C's
apartment,
really building Johnny C's apartment. It was just a hospital set.
But I think Randall spearheaded, I'm sure, we got to go on that crazy amazing trip, everybody, to Vegas. We had to do, like, they were able to kind of combine a press event with a Scrubs rap party. And so they organized it. So like our whole cast went to Vegas all together.
You know, things that'll never happen ever in.
Never again.
Ever again.
I doubt any show is taking their whole company to Vegas to throw a bash. Those were the old days.
Yeah.
That's, oh my God. Or when we got to shoot a whole season in the Bahamas with the whole crew.
Not a season.
Not a season. Just a couple episodes.
Episode.
Sarah may have stayed and shot a season, but we only shot an episode.
What is a season?
Donald, I want to know a sports question, and I want you to be honest.
Yes.
Did you know what the quote unquote catch was?
Absolutely.
Talked about it. It's a famous thing that sports people know about.
Absolutely. So Joe Montana.
Yeah.
It looked like he couldn't throw it to anyone in this game. Now, granted, I don't know who they were playing. So when we're talking about it in the show, I didn't know who they were playing. But he found Dwight Clark in the end zone. And it was, you know, it's one of the biggest catches in history. As a matter of fact, it's a part of a commercial, like a Gatorade commercial or something like that. And that's how I first heard about it, because I wasn't a big football fan growing up. I didn't become a football fan until later on in life. But yes, I did know when we did the when they referenced the catch, I knew exactly what it was.
Okay, good, because I didn't know, because I don't know anything about sports. If like everyone who's into sports knows, oh, the catch, it's called like the catch.
Well, I mean, at that time it was called the catch. I'm sure since then they're like Eli Manning and Mario Manningham. They have a, you know, how he found him on the, you know, running down the. It's. I didn't know when or where the catch was, but I had heard of the reference before.
Donald, tell us about the bowling thing, because I was laughing at this going, what are those pins? Like, what is that supposed to be in the hospital, those giant blue things?
First of all, this is a testament for how immature Christopher Turk was. So the kid says to him, hey, it's the catch. Turk turns around and goes, yeah, I'll watch the catch with you. And within 15 minutes, he's bowling a kid down the hospital hall. Like, how did this kid convince, like, that's how weak-willed Chris Turk is. How in the hell did this kid convince him to put him in a wheelchair and push him down the hall into a bunch of, I guess they were recycling bins.
Is that what they were supposed to be, recycling bins?
I think
bins?
So.
Because to me, they looked like cardboard tubes that someone
right. put in the hospital. I'm hoping that it was a recycling bin. But, like, how did this kid convince him and the rest of the floor? Like, Chris Turk walked out the room and was like, yo, this is what we're going to do. All right?
I know.
I'm a put him in a wheelchair.
I know I just started as a doctor right. here. But I'm going to roll a patient in a wheelchair down the hall. If you're a new doctor, don't try that at work, please.
Well, that was the great thing about the show also, is that he was held accountable for it. You know, Kelso right away. And this is where Kelso mentors Turk kind of also. Like, we're not here to make friends. We're here to treat these patients, dude. Mm-hmm. Be a doctor.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about the park. Sarah, you referenced it already, but I remember feeling really bad at 9 minutes and 30 seconds slamming that little girl's face into the cake.
That was hilarious. I wish I could do that to my kids sometimes.
It was funny. I mean, it was funny on paper when we got there and she has that cute little face. And I was like, so you guys really want me to jam this girl's face into the cake? And they're like, yeah, you got to do it. You can't just like fake it. You got to do it. And I was like, and I talked to her. I was like, sweetie, are you okay with this? And she's like, yeah, sure. It's going to be funny. And I was like, all right, here we go. And I just jammed her head in it. And it felt really nice.
Yeah, listen. Sarah can attest to this. She has children. As much as we love our children.
Oh, sometimes you want to just
slam their face into a cake.
Especially when they're going to be quarantining for the near multiple days, months.
If I had the opportunity, and I knew my wife wouldn't be pissed off at me for doing it, Rocco's face would have been slammed into a couple of his birthday cakes. I'm
into
putting it out there right
into
now.
Into many a cake?
I'm just going to put that out there right now.
I might need to go bake a couple cakes.
We're going to go to break. When we come back, we have a caller.
Hey, listeners. It's been over a year since my family switched to our first Helix sleep mattress. And let me tell you, we've never slept better at my house. If you're still sleeping on an old school spring mattress, you're not getting your best night's sleep.
The Helix lineup offers 20 unique mattresses, including their award-winning Lux and Ultra Premium Elite collections.
So how will you know which Helix mattress works best for you and your body? Take the Helix Sleep Quiz and find your perfect mattress in under 2 minutes. And your personalized mattress is shipped straight to your door, free of charge.
Helix knows there's no better way to test out a new mattress than by sleeping on it in your own home. That's why they offer a 100-night trial and a 10 to 15-year warranty to try out your new Helix mattress, depending on the model.
Don't want to take my word for it? Helix has been awarded the number one mattress picked by GQ and Wired Magazine.
Helix is offering up to 30% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/realfriends. That's helixsleep.com/realfriends. This is their best offer yet, and it won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now. JLab Audio is personal tech designed for you that fits your life, looks cool, and offers surprisingly awesome value.
Imagine the products and features you actually want and make sure the entire experience owning them is a great one.
Always packing the most functionality and fun into every product at a truly accessible price.
Zach, let me tell you, JLab has these new luxury over-ear headphones called the JBuds Lux ANC.
Yep.
These seamlessly blend innovation and lab quality sound, all in these sleek headphones that guarantee an elevated listening experience. You can connect to multiple devices, customize your sound in the JLab app, and get over 70 hours of playtime.
Well, buddy, those sound pretty cool, but have you heard of the JBuds ANC3? They are the smallest smart active noise canceling true wireless earbuds you can find. You can also connect to multiple devices, but these come with a built-in USB-C charging cable and a noise canceling microphone for crisp, clear phone calls. Use Real Friends for 25% off your order. Visit jlab.com to find your kind of tech. Reboot your credit card with Apple Card, the only credit card designed for iPhone. It gives you up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase.
Plus, Apple Card has no fees, not even hidden ones. Apply for Apple Card now in the wallet app on iPhone.
Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Variable APRs for Apple Card range from 19.24% to 29.49% based on credit worthiness. Rates as of February 1, 2024. Terms and more at applecard.com. Kind is calling all flavor chasers. Hey, it's Zach here, and Kind has 6 new flavors for whatever you crave.
Is it something sweet? Try the new seeds, fruit, and nuts bars with flavors like dark chocolate, raspberry, and pumpkin seed. They're made with sweet raspberries and cranberries. And the number one ingredient, seeds.
And for something savory, Kind has you covered. Try their roasted nuts and jalapeno bars, or grab the rosemary nuts and sea salt bars. Savory snacking has never been this delicious. I know your mouth is watering. I personally love the raspberry. Donald, let me tell you, I could eat 10 of those a day.
Oh, really? Rosemary's mine. All 6 new bars are gluten-free and have at least 5 grams of protein.
Kind always leads with nutrient-dense ingredients like nuts. Explore all the new flavors waiting for you, like strawberry sunflower seed, orange cranberry pumpkin seed, and paprika nuts and mesquite smoked sea salt. This is the bar for people who love real food.
Try all the new flavors of Kind seeds, fruit and nuts bars, and Kind savory bars. Shop on KindSnacks.com today.
All right, we're getting good at that whole break thing, Joelle. We're very lucky here on this show, Sarah Chark, that we get to take a caller once an episode. And here she is. What's your name?
Alexis Torres. Hey! In my best Oprah.
Donald just gave you an Oprah intro, Alexis.
I know. Alexis!
Oh, I was looking for your name, and the good thing about Zoom is it just says it right there, Alexis Torres Plumley.
Right there on the bottom.
Alexis Torres Plumley!
Donald, don't ruin the woman's hearing. She's in quarantine.
I'm actually in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania right now.
Oh,
PA in the house.
Maya family has a steakhouse nearby.
Oh, really?
Called the Glass Lounge.
Oh, I haven't gone there yet, but it's awesome.
Will you go there? I want you to go there. Tell them I sent you. If you're if you're in that area, go to the Glass Lounge.
It's gonna be a while, buddy. It's gonna be a while.
Oh yeah, not now, obviously. But you know when this nightmare is over, go check out the Glass Lounge.
Yeah, I will definitely go
for sure. All right, well, thank you for coming on. And do you have a question? It doesn't have to be Sarah Chalk focused. It doesn't, just because she's...
But if you want to, we understand.
Alexis is an intelligent human,
and she probably knows the best person to talk to.
I mean, we'll see. No, just kidding. I have... Actually, it's technically a question for all of you guys. If you could switch roles with anyone in the series, any character... Who would it be, and how would you play their character? Would it be different than how it was originally played, or?
That's a very good question. Sarah, go first.
I mean, if it meant that I could have Donald's dancing skills.
Was that fantasy that Sarah and I were making out, and I was making out with you because she was you? Oh my God.
So like, dirty. It starts off where you guys are making out, and then she's like, you fantasized about kissing Turk just now, didn't you?
And then I made out with Mandy Moore. As myself.
Mandy was dressed up as herself. No, Mandy was just herself, and you were dressed up as me, I think, right?
I think.
That was a really beautiful moment in television history right there.
I didn't make out with Judy.
In the pilot.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we just watched that, where you made out with the model girl.
Was that the pilot, or was that the second episode?
That was the second episode.
Yeah.
But so you'd like to be Donald if you could be anybody else, is what you're saying.
Well, if I could do that fucking poison dance, or Rowdy, that would be pretty low.
Low pressure.
What about you, Zach?
It's a very good question. I guess It's funny because you don't want to pick. You want to have some screen time, right? You want to pick one of the seven, so you're going to have some good screen time. I think I would choose Johnny C. just because he had such amazing. They just knew how to write for him so amazingly well, and he was just. I don't know. I think that I just love all the material they gave Johnny. So I think that would be a really challenging, fun part to even attempt to do.
Nobody's going to pick MASH walking around in a banana hammock?
That's who I was going to pick. If I could pick anybody, I guess it would be Mashio. Okay.
Because
if I could get, but like we teased, we used to make fun of Mashio about running line and everything like that. But I had such a hard time learning my lines back then that it probably would have suited me to play MASH.
The first step to solving memorizing your lines, Donald, is to actually just do it.
Or to read the script, actually. That's read the script.
I love how you're always like, I just have such a hard time memorizing lines. I'm like, dude, you've been playing PlayStation in your dressing room.
That's all I did, yeah.
You haven't even looked at it.
No, yeah. Okay.
All right.
Do you have another question,
Alexis? We're going to answer a better one. No, okay.
Yeah, your questions suck. That's what he just said.
No,
he just
pretty much said, right. I like okay. you. I like you.
I'm creative. It was thoughtful. We have Alexis, asked this before.
Alexis, I think you're spectacular, and I love Harrisburg, but I think you got a better question in you. Go.
No, I don't know if I should ask.
No, now you got to ask.
What was something that you were super proud of back then that you did? Maybe it was a scene or a specific joke or anything like that. But then now, since you guys are doing the rewatch and you've seen it now, you're kind of like, oh, that wasn't as good as I remember.
Well, that's a good question. Sarah, as guest, you have to go first.
Jesus, the pressure. I feel like, interestingly enough, like...
You're like, I feel like, interestingly enough, I was just fucking amazing.
I thought you were amazing.
Like, I actually find the early stuff a little bit harder to watch. I feel like I learned so much on the show. I feel like I learned so much from Bill. I learned so much from the rest of the cast. And I feel like it's so different watching those early episodes 8 years later. Certainly with Elliot too, the character changed a lot. Like in the pilot, we even did reshoots. She was much harder and much, you know, she was a bit more of a biatch in the beginning. And then we actually did a couple of reshoots to soften her. And then I think, you know, the line between me and her started to blur. So first part of your question, what were you the most proud of? Certainly, interestingly enough, this is definitely one of those episodes. Like when I think back on the 8 years, this is the first one to pop into my mind about just the kind of show that Scrubs was. And then in terms of things to do differently, well, that's just, I mean.
Sarah, I don't think you could have done everything differently. I wish that I could go back and have a chin. Because this episode starts with the least flattering view of my non-existent chin. And in later episodes, I would look at the director and be like, bro, don't shoot me like that. I mean, I'm doing the best I can with what I have, but that's not the angle I want for myself.
And Bill, I don't know how many listeners know this, but Bill would like to add things that were actual real physical attributes and write them into the show. So characters would be named by their physical attributes. So like the guy with the beard is Beard Face, because he, you know,
Beard Face.
And so for me, my character, you know, you had to say lines like short hair gives me pig face, which is not untrue.
Or
there was one where I had my character was like, oh yeah, chin hair's back, because I have this mole where three hairs grow out of it. And so that was actually written into the show. By the way, my son said to me a few years ago, completely seriously, he's like, Mama, I have terrible news. And I said, what? And he goes, you're growing a beard.
Oh my gosh.
So there were definitely moments on the show where you just had to go, okay, all in the name of comedy, I shall air out my biggest insecurities.
Yeah.
And, you know, in terms of how it worked too, like Bill would come up and he would watch us. And this is not common for every, you know, creator of a show to come up for every single rehearsal. He would come up from, you know, to the set from the writer's room, and the writer's room was in another wing of the hospital. He would tweak a lot of stuff. He would say, I actually don't love this blocking. I think how I'd had it in my head was X, Y, or Z. And he would tweak our performance and our jokes too, to the point where like a lot of times I think actors like don't like a line read. And I just had so much respect for him. I'd be like, yeah, just if you've got some way in your head, just, you know, tell us and we'll do it.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Alexis Torres Plumlee. Are you going to give her the Oprah goodbye send off as well, Don?
Let's say goodbye to Alexis Torres Plumley.
You get a car. You get a car. You get a car.
Alexis, we cannot give you a car.
I know. It's okay. I can't go anywhere anyway.
You can't go anywhere. Yeah.
Yay.
Yes. Go get a steak when this is all said and done at the Glass Lounge. All right. Thank you so much, Alexis.
Bye.
Thanks, Alexis.
Later.
You guys, at 11:49, one of my biggest regrets in the history of Scrubs is that I flinch right before those bricks fall on me. And I remember Bill being so disappointed in me because there were like four takes of it and I flinched every time. But it's pretty tricky to not flinch when you know a bunch. I know that they're not real bricks, but it still was noticeably uncomfortable.
I mean, it'd be pretty hard not to, especially I feel like all that shit, like even if it was like a major pratfall or something. Thing. Once you've done it once, I feel like our best chance out of the gate is on your first take, because the second you've done it once, you know what's going to happen. You know the feeling of it. Maybe you like tweak something a little bit in your shoulder, and then it's kind of it's a wrap.
But this was early on in the show, and I was really loving doing physical comedy, and I always loved physical comedy. You referenced John Ritter. I mean, when I grew up on Three's Company, and I just thought that John Ritter was the funniest person I'd ever seen. And I wanted to be like him. And Bill was giving me lots of love for my physical comedy. And this was the first moment where he like called me in the editor's room. He's like, dude, you flinched on every take. And I was like, no. Right.
You blew it.
And I was like, I let daddy down.
Fucking blew it.
The first time I was called out by Bill after he left the editing room was, you guys will remember the day we had been so lucky to get nominated for an Emmy. And we were going and we were excited, and I got to borrow this fancy dress, and the stylist, I'd never had a stylist before, and she said, so you need to go get it.
Oh my God, I remember this day. This was the best.
And I said, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to go get a tan. And she said, okay, go get a spray tan.
Oh gosh.
And so I said, okay. So I think the Emmys were like on the Sunday. And so on the Friday of work.
It might've been well before that. It might've been well before that. It might've been like maybe 5 days before or something like that, dude. Because we did the whole episode.
Let her tell the story.
Okay. So I get to the tanning booth, and it's like that fucking episode of Friends where Ross becomes a 9 instead of a 3 because it keeps spraying stuff at him. He doesn't turn around. It sprays again and sprays again. So I get in there, and you watch this little video, and you put this cream on your hands, and you got to spin around and do these weird poses. And I had like negative 5 minutes to get this done before going to set. And I put a hairnet over my face so that I wouldn't tan my face. And then I rip that off, and then the thing keeps spraying. And so I get to set, and I'm tanned. And then
tanned is not the word, Sarah.
No, I'm about to say, hold on now.
You were fucking, hold on you now. Were full Oompa Loompa.
Hold on
no,
now.
No, not yet, not yet. Because oh, what sorry. Happens with this spray tan is it develops over time.
Oh, okay.
And so I was in the makeup chair, and they did my makeup, and we're doing these scenes. And then as the day goes on, I'm just getting like more and more and more tanned. And instead of actually tanned, it was just more and more and more orange. And so Bill comes the dog harder than any special effect we've ever done on the show, harder than making Zach's head explode in the fantasy sequence, is going to be making you look less like an Oompa Loompa.
Oh gosh.
You were like, we're trying to float filters in front of your face because we can't color time it and just jack out, like we can't just wind the knob and take out some of the color because we keep doing it. You're in a scene with Donald and then make Donald white.
Oh, dude, I'm gonna say something right now. I remember when it happened. I remember you being on set. And I remember saying to you, did you change something? Did you do your hair different or something like that? What's so different about you? And you were like, I remember, got 10.
I remember just like kids in a family, the three of us, whenever one of us was in trouble, I was always so happy when it wasn't me. And you just be like, you just be on set, just kind of bouncing around like, oh shit, somebody's in trouble and it's not me. And Sarah is friggin' orange.
Oh my God. It was so embarrassing.
It's like we were
That's
laughing
just like the
episode.
Time I got the braces on the inside of my mouth.
We were laughing about that when Donald showed up with braces and he was like, so Bill, I got braces and nobody can even notice.
Oh my God.
The exact same thing.
Oh God. So how what long? Did you do? Did you just have to go get him taken out?
Yeah, right off.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, he made me get him taken out.
I got Invisalign in like season 2. Everybody made so much fun of me. But I had to take them out like right before a take, but you're supposed to wear them like 22 and a tween. Like it was just, oh, it's a disaster.
I just remember Donald, it was so funny watching him try to sell the bill that the braces, nobody was going to notice those braces on the inside of his teeth.
It's going to be great. Everybody's going to love this.
Nobody's even going to notice. And I think it's going to be great for my, it's going to be great for my teeth.
I remember I went home that night after the spray tan and I had to scrub every ounce of my body. I just, my face and my body, I just was like taking salt to it. And then I did a movie in Hawaii last year and the person wanted us to do a spray tan. So Lauren Lapkus, who plays the lead in the movie, and I was supposed to get spray tans. And I said, I've actually had a couple of really bad experiences with spray tans. I don't recommend it. I think it just reacts with me in a bad, orangey way. And they're like, no, we have like the best people in Hawaii. They're going to come, they're going to do it. You're going to love it. So I come down the next morning. The woman comes to your hotel room night before, sprays you down. I come down into the hair and makeup trailer and they are freaking out. They're like, your legs are orange. And then Lauren Lapkus hasn't seen any of this like preamble. She walks in, she's like, who loves a spray tan? And they're like, Sarah, quickly go back up to your hotel room. Take some salt, scrub it all off. Get it all off quick. I'm like, okay, I'll be right back.
Oh, my God. So, Sarah, I don't think spray tans are for you.
No.
Do you burn when you get into the sun?
Yes.
She's very pale. Look at her. Look how pale she is.
That was the other joke on this movie that we did in Hawaii. I would literally, in between scenes, I would be, you know, completely covered up to the point where we would go out at night and everyone else would be like, Chalk, do you have your sunscreen on? Like,
wow.
I burn.
Let's talk about the scene, but the dramatic scene, Sarah. I think your acting is really good here. At 1703, there's this awesome scene where you and Judy, where Judy comes to get you and you're at the soda machine. I think this is a really, really good acting on your part.
Was this the first big monologue for you on the show?
I thought you were going to say, was this the first time that you put in your iPod and listened to Josh Radin?
Oh, is that what you did? Oh, you're giving Josh Radin
a plug.
Was
it Josh Radin or was it, what was it? I will remember you.
Well, don't take away her Josh Radin plug, Donald.
Josh Radin's gotten enough plugs on this show.
Is that who you use to make your eyes to make yourself emotional and eyes tear up?
Well, I was still young. I mean, at that point, now you know, as you grow older, you have many more experiences to draw from. But I used to use an iPod and I would play sad music and to kind of get into the mode. That scene was kind of, it was very early on. It was enough. I mean, I remember just shooting it and it was.
Was it Babies Got Back?
Back. I mean,
there's something about the lyrics that
you can see if you look very closely. If you stop, freeze the frame, you can see my hips just kind of
undulating,
my booty's shaking a little bit. Yeah, no, Josh Radin, let's give him a plug, man. He obviously was a soundtrack to many things. I delivered my children to Joshua Radin's song.
There you go. If you're gonna deliver your children, and that's coming up, we recommend you use the musical stylings of Joshua Radin.
Josh Radin sang the song at my wedding.
Our first dance was to Josh Radin.
And he fucked up the song tremendously.
He did?
But I love him. Oh my God, he didn't even remember the song. I got the video.
Which song of it was it? Which song of his
No,
was
it was
it?
Moon pours through the ceiling tonight, embraces us with light. And it was perfect for the moment. The rest of my life can't compare to this night. Whoa, yeah. And only the heartaches have given me sight. They bring me to you, right?
Bring me to you.
He fucked up the whole song, dude.
Well, that was
into the opposite of a plug.
No, it's fine, dude. He did it. Listen, it's not every day you get somebody like him to, one, perform at your wedding, also to do it for free. So
you know that he also performed at Ellen's wedding. He's got a lot of celebrity
I'm sure they paid him. I didn't have to pay him. And for that alone,
we thank you.
Josh Radin, you are one of my heroes.
I can't believe Donald didn't ask me to sing at his wedding, by the way.
Well, Sarah has the worst voice in the world, America. Let me tell you something. Sarah. America and all other nations listening, don't ever let Sarah sing. Windows
These
will break.
Photographs. Ooh. No.
This is what's happening in my house. The windows are going ksh, ksh, ksh.
I was conspicuously absent in the musical episode. And also,
do you remember when Daryl Hannah in Splash says her name? That's what happens when Sarah sings.
I guess we haven't covered that yet, that you guys didn't ask me to help you record the opening song. Can you imagine?
Do you like our song?
I love your song.
Yeah, Charlie Puth wrote the music, and Donald and I were
so fancy.
Donald and I were the lyricists.
Well, we wrote the melody too and then sent it to him. Well, the melody is
right. Can you take credit for melody? Melody was us. Charlie Puth is producer and music writer.
Right.
And you and I are the lyricists.
But we also need to give a little shout out to sitcom shows from back in the day, like The Jeffersons.
Oh, yeah.
And,
Someone said on Twitter, I thought it was right. It said it's a mix between the Brady Bunch theme and the Jeffersons theme.
Yeah. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah. I thought that was really perfect. Sarah, do you find yourself singing our theme song when you're in your house in quarantine?
It's you know, I've actually learned it. I'm learning the ukulele actually. And I'll send you guys a clip of me singing it. And I'll leave it in your hands if you want to.
Put it on the show.
My girlfriend caught me on the treadmill listening to our theme song and laughed at me. Not with me, at me.
You're proud of it. You're proud of it.
Things I noticed about the show, about this show.
Go ahead.
I had no idea that I bopped that hard in the hallway. And when I say bop, I mean, like, I had the straight up. My walk is legendary, dude.
A strut. Is it like a strut?
It's like a strut, but it's like so over the top, dude. It's so over the top.
It's like George Jefferson when he would.
This is exactly like George Jefferson. It's like so heavy. It's like, yo, dude, why are you going so hard with that?
And who I was just your inspiration? Do you remember who your inspiration was?
It's always Sherman Hemsley.
Sherman Hemsley.
Always.
I wanted to say something about the scene In 1907, I have this dramatic scene with Catherine Justin, and it was the first time I ever had the balls to go to Bill because I thought I did a good job, and then he showed me an edit of it, and he had taken out some of my dramatic pauses. And it was one of the first times in my acting career where I was like, I got to go talk to him because he's making me look like a bad actor. He's taking out the pauses, like, you know, because, you know, the show had to be cut down to 22 minutes or something. And I remember Bill going like, dude, there's no time. It's 22 minutes. There's no time for pauses. There's no time for dramatic pauses. And I think in the end he put a little bit back, but it was like, it was when she goes, are you okay? And then I go, I'm scared. And then when I saw it edited together for the first time, I was like, are you okay? I'm scared. And I was like, oh, that makes me look really bad. And this is a thing that actors, I'm sure, I know as a director, feel all the time sometimes when you look and go, why did you cut me like that? Like, on the day, I thought I was doing a much better job. But if you take out that pause and cut to me like that, I don't look as good as I want to be, you know? I'm sure you guys had that feeling throughout the show sometimes.
Well, yeah, you know, we would tell jokes sometimes and jokes wouldn't make the show. And, you know, we'd have moments where we thought, you know, we were crushing it. And then only to see, you know, the editors and Bill decided to use the reaction shot instead of your actual, you know, instead of your performance.
Joke's gone.
Right. Or the joke's just completely gone.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
absolutely.
I love that scene that you're talking about, Zach. It was one of my favorite ones in the episode when, you know, she tells you to go and live your life and you're like, you know, I'm just working on a few things, and you go up to the thing and you're kind of pretending.
I don't want to go. And then it's always, you know, my father who passed away recently, always would reference this moment in Scrubs that he thought it was so incredibly moving, the idea of an older woman comforting a young doctor about death. And he said, he was like, I've never seen anything like that before. And when I was just watching it this time, I just remember how much he would always reference that, because it was so beautiful, that sentiment that JD doesn't know how to deal with death yet. But here's this older woman who's ready to go, and she's the one comforting him about it. I just thought that was beautifully written.
Somehow managed to also be funny in parts. That was what I couldn't believe. Like, when she's just like, everybody dies. No, they don't.
Yeah.
Right.
No, they don't.
No, they don't.
Right. The Meifel Tower.
The Meifel Tower.
Have you ever been up the Meifel Tower?
What about the Meifel Tower?
That being said, the whole list thing, especially with the way things are right now, that whole list thing got me to thinking, you know what I mean? I don't have any regrets in my life or anything like that, but there are certain things that I still want to do, you know what I mean? And we're in quarantine, and it doesn't seem like, you know, it doesn't feel like we're going to get out of this anytime soon. You know what I mean? Not to sound morbid or dark or anything like that. But when JD brings up the list and she's like, I've done all of those things already, it really made me think, like, well, you know, when this is over, I'm going to make sure that I get out and I live a lot more than I did before. You know what I mean?
And, well, that's interesting. I mean, this quarantine thing, I agree. I think it gives you perspective. And I've just been feeling focusing on gratitude a lot, because I just think that, like, when all this is so insane, and it makes you focus on how lucky we are and what we want to appreciate in life, you know, just the simple things like being able to go to a restaurant with friends and laugh and have a drink and I don't know. I it's interesting you say that. So have you made a list, Donald? Are you making lists of things you want
to
do?
I'm going to start a list. I know a lot of it has to do with my kids and making sure that they get to experience a lot of the things that I didn't experience when I was a kid, when I was young. You know what I mean? I try to do that now, but I feel like maybe I need to go a little bit overboard and then, you know, have my wife tell me we need to dial it back a little bit. We're going too far. You know what I mean? Like, there's certain things that my kids have never done that, and that's because I don't do it. You know what I mean? And I don't want to do that to them. I want them to have that experience and that adventure.
Mm-hmm. I feel like it's also because we don't know when this is over. We don't know how long we're going to be doing this for. And it doesn't seem to be short. It sounds like potentially until we have a vaccine, who knows how long this chunk of our lives is and what it looks like and whether it opens back up. I feel like as impossible as it is and as trite as it's like trying to be in the moment and trying to figure out what, like the rare times with them that I have now that are so hard to get in the everyday. You think about how much time you spend in the car, driving them to activities, doing whatever, and when work takes over and that becomes so all consuming. And I feel like as much of it as that we can squeeze out just here, like just sitting with them. Like I was reading something the other day saying, you know, people are worried about their kids getting behind in education. What if they actually came out ahead? And I thought that was such a cool way to look at it. Like kids, this is going to form who they are and who they become. And what if they actually start to appreciate the small things that we're starting to appreciate right now, instead of just the grind of everyday life? And what if they actually learn to do meaningful chores at home and learn the value in that and learn how to, you know, actually be.
I hear you. You know, the only thing I worry about with all of that is their social skills when this is all said and done. You know what I mean? That's the only thing I worry about. But yeah, you know, we got this kid reading. You know, she's on sight words and we're trying to get her to read and stuff like that. And we're working with math and all of that stuff. But at the end of the day, it's like, you know, there's something special about being around other children their age to interact with. You know what I mean?
It's so true. I know my heart breaks for only kids who are, you know, having to go through this right now with no kids to play with. It's really hard.
The show ends with Hallelujah by John Cale, which has been covered by lots of folks. I thought this was a particularly beautiful rendition. And again, I think it was the first real time I noticed the show ending with a sweet, somber, uplifting song in a beautiful way, cutting to the montage. And I got goosebumps at 2014 when we all three whip our heads around, revealing that we've all, it's not one in three. In this case, the odds have fallen, so we've lost three of three. I got goosebumps up and down my arms at that moment. I thought that was really beautifully done.
Absolutely.
So shocking when that happens, right? Like as a viewer, I think you're not expecting that. You're kind of waiting for that statistic that they set up at the beginning.
Mm. And then we end the show, and this is what I was saying a few episodes before. Sarah, you weren't here for this, but it's really important for doctors to be able to pick themselves back up after something like this happens. And, you know, it's also very important that this happens to these young doctors at an early time, so they do know how to set up boundaries and do know how to set up walls to help them be professional. It's tragic that it has to be death that does it, but yeah, you know, to lose someone you care about and then show up the next day at that job, it's very difficult. I can't imagine it. I find it difficult to watch, and it's very difficult to experience, I would imagine.
And that piece of it's so cool that the show kind of shows that right after with all, you know, Turk going back and introducing himself
right
to the patient, JD taking the time to go be on the grass, Elliot kind of figuring out how to take charge. And that was kind of cool too. Johnny C's conversation with Elliot when he says, "You made the right call, you did."
Yeah.
And she says, "I know." And I didn't remember that. And when I saw that, I, you know, just sort of having her take that confident position. Yeah. Yeah.
That was really powerful. That was really powerful, I thought.
Okay.
Listen, guys, we did it. I'm so glad, Sarah, we had you, because we wanted to have you on this one, because we all keep saying this was a very special episode for all of us. And thank you for coming on. And I hope, you know, we're having fun doing this. I hope that Donald and I both hope that you'll come as many times as you're willing to and rewatch the show with us.
I loved it. It was so fun. It was so fun to do.
Is that a yes?
Was that a yes? That was a very non-committal yes.
That was a
yes.
Very odd.
That is, I'm in. You know where I am, right, guys. Cool. I'm not doing anything.
How do you say goodbye in Canadian, Sarah?
I think it's goodbye. Goodbye. Wait, is it something like
au revoir?
Au revoir. That's French.
That's, well, you know, there's a lot of them speak French up there, Donald.
Oh.
That's a bilingual country here, guys.
Is it?
Yes. On that note, Donald, if you'll lead us in song.
Why got to be Donald? Why can't I lead us in song?
Sarah, you can lead us in song. We will now, Donald, count us in, please.
One, a two.
I prefer it when you count down like Debbie.
Five. Okay, you got big dreams.
Yeah,
you want fame.
You take the monologue this time.
Well, fame costs. And right here is where you start paying.
In sweat. Five, six, seven, eight.
Here's some stories about a show we made. About a bunch of docs and nurses and a janitor who loved to hate. I said, here's a story.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, it's simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. You can learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Did you know that 46% of us don't take all our vacation days? Even though it's been proven that taking time off to play makes us more productive.
In California, no matter where you go, you'll find play. Explore a redwood forest, immerse yourself in art galleries, or just park yourself in a beach chair and chill. Play is everywhere in California, so take some well-deserved playtime off and discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
In every pair of Tecovas boots, you can expect handmade quality, first wear comfort, and timeless Western style.
Tecovas boots are always made from Peruvian bovine and exotic leathers, and with occasional resoling, they will last a lifetime. The best way to shop for boots is at your local Tecovas stores, where you'll be greeted by the smell of fresh leather and a friendly smile.
Come on in, grab a cold one, get fitted by a pro, and shop the latest styles. Visit Tecovas.com. That's TECOVAS.com. And don't go gently, y'all. Hey, it's Donald, and Kind Snacks has six new flavors for you to crave. Flavors like rosemary, strawberry, jalapeno, and raspberry.
Each of the six flavors is made with number one ingredient seeds or nuts and has fruity or savory flavors depending on what you're craving.
They're gluten-free with 5 to 6 grams of protein in every bar. Nutritious snacking doesn't have to be all blah and boring. The bar for people who love real food.
Try all the flavors. Shop on Amazon today.